And now, the International Vienna for Everyone. And now, the International Vienna for Everyone.
Why are you leaving us? Why are you leaving Vienna?
Why am I leaving?
It's the first time I start a podcast. Why are you leaving Vienna? I always start, oh, how did you move to Vienna?
Well, when I moved to Vienna, I already had in mind that I'm coming, you know. I moved from Israel, so let's start from there. Mm-hmm. I moved from Israel and I moved to Vienna because I wanted to see things from a different angle, to experience Europe, to experience living in a different place. I was traveling a lot around the globe, but I was never living somewhere. And when I moved to Vienna, my plan was to come for like 2 or maximum 3 years with the idea that I would go back to Israel, where I like the weather and it's the family and it's the friends that you move.
It's home there.
Yeah, exactly. It's my home, practically. So this was the idea, but you know, the time goes fast. And as we say, we make our plans and God loves for above.
Yeah.
I've already 7 years in Vienna. Mm. So the 2-3 years vision changing. So it feels a bit that now is the time to go back. Nevertheless, I have to say, truth is that I also like Vienna, and the longer you stay in a place, you're getting more attached to it.
Mm.
And I'm thinking now how I can kind of connect these two, in the sense that maybe to do something on the line between Vienna and Israel.
Mm. You don't want to detach completely. You still want to have a connection.
Yeah, I want to. Yeah, I like the place here. I like the people. Also, the hub is a very nice place. Like, you know, I like the people and our team.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it on our recent video.
The spirit. Where is it? Where can we check out the video?
Well, you can check it on our homepage, obviously, on our website. It's on the homepage. And also the
website
of Vienna.impacthub.net, and also on all our channels. So on Instagram, it's Impact Hub Vienna. LinkedIn, same Impact Hub Vienna. Or Facebook, you can see it there. We just launched it.
And you're saying this because so you basically directed the project of the video, right? Because you're the marketing director of the Impact
Hub. That's correct.
Yeah. How long you've been the marketing director at the Impact
Hub? I've been the marketing director a year now.
A year?
Yeah.
But were you working here before or no?
I say here
because we are recording at the Impact Hub Vienna, just for the information.
Yeah. So I am connected to Impact Hub Vienna since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I started as a mentor, so I was an expert. There is an experts pool here, and I was mentoring in different acceleration programs. Then I was doing some digitalization projects based on my tech knowledge as product manager. I implemented the CRM here, the HubSpot. And then I was also managing a partnership program, Validate Global. And then I moved to marketing director. Mm-hmm. So I was quite engaged with the Hub for quite some time.
And what is your favorite segment with all this position that you cover?
I mean, I'll be honest. Yeah, no, I have to say, like, I like the HubSpot part in the sense of, like, you know, it's like to change or to set up processes properly. But I also very much like the marketing where you can bring your creativity into life. So I'm very happy with this video because I wanted for quite some time to really demonstrate the spirit of the Hub, the people. And finally, we made it as my last contribution to the Hub for now.
Is it, do you have like a deadline? When are you leaving Vienna? Like a fixed date?
No, I don't have a fixed date. I'm finishing with the Hub on the 15th of August with the idea to have time to plan the move. It still takes time. There are some bureaucratic things to take care of. There are different arrangements to do. It's not so easy, you know, that you pack 7 years just like that in a suitcase and you go. So we need to find an apartment. It will take a bit. It's a process for my wife and I to figure things out. So it took a few weeks to kind of also go to Israel.
Is your wife also from Israel?
No, my wife, actually, she's originally from Romania, but she has been living in Vienna for 19 years already.
But I know she's related to the Impact Hub as well, right?
Yeah, that's true. She's actually one of the co-founders of the hub, and I always make this laugh that she lured me more and more to the hub. I was an expert, then she wanted me to support more, and yeah, that's how is it working with your wife in the same place? And
so, well, somehow she's your boss, right, at the Impact Hub, in a sense.
Yes and no. I mean, first of all, so at the Impact Hub, there are two managing directors, and I was working mainly with the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, I mean, in the hub, we are working in the settings which call holocracy. Mm-hmm. So it's in a way, it's not very hierarchic.
Mm-hmm.
Hierarchical.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a more flatter. And so I didn't have too much interaction with her directly. But of course, you know, when you go home, that's the point. So the main thing is, you talk about work and you will sometimes want to go home and, you know, cut and make a cut. And this is sometimes challenging.
Have you ever thought, because of the Impact Hub or because of choices or decision made in the Impact Hub, that might affect either one or the other from you? Like somebody did something that might affect the other one.
Yeah, I understand. I'm thinking if there was something.
There must have been something.
No, I mean, she was responsible for the other areas. I mean, but for example, I was as a marketing promoting one of the programs she was involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to work closely together to think about the program and how to make it well. But I mean, it went well. I mean, we worked before. So we have a consulting company together, mm-hmm. and we worked on project together.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this experience.
Well, since you are still together and moving together to Israel, it means that it definitely worked.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I always said, you know, COVID was the, for every couple, I think it was the break it or make it, you know?
How was it for you?
We managed. So as you said,
if you are still together.
Did you also buy a sofa bed?
Yeah.
A big one?
For emergencies.
Actually, you know, if we want to make that, you know, we moved from 2 rooms apartment to 3 rooms apartment. So just in case.
Who was the first to leave the matrimonial room?
Say,
who was the first one to leave
the matrimonial room, like to go and sleep in the other room?
We didn't get to that, to say.
Yeah.
You know, that's an option.
There are couples who actually don't fight to take the other person outside of the room, but actually the people fight because they want to leave the room and have finally some peace. And they're like, no, I'm going to the other. No, I am going. No, you stay here because I'm going.
I mean, normally if I want to get a piece of fight, I would rather go outside.
Normally.
But I mean, we allow each one some space.
Oh.
So I think it's fine. I mean, the fixed and speak by themselves.
I think we are together, as you said, we work together, we are that.
And does she speak your language?
No, and I think that's a good thing, because then I can speak with friends, really.
And she's there, I don't know anything about you.
That you have done in Israel before, and what are you doing there?
Oh, she knows. She knows, of course. I
mean, she knows what you told her.
Exactly.
That's the thing where she doesn't need to learn the language, right?
Is it a hard language?
It's not a hard language, but you know, it's like me and German. When I moved to Vienna, I had in mind, and I think that I'm pretty okay with languages. I had in mind, okay, I want to speak German fluent in like a year or a year and a half. And then I actually put some effort in that. I reached to an okay level. I mean, I can manage conversation a lot better. The grammar is pretty difficult. It's challenging, as I think everyone will say, or assist the foreigners. But it also depends on the environment you are at, because now at the hub we speak English mainly. And therefore, I don't have so many opportunities to practice the language, and then nothing kind of motivates you to learn more. So the same with her. I think that, yes, she learned a bit Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, once we move, she will have more triggers to learn. She will also speak in the street, and, you know, there are more things, and it's the environment that also kind of, to some extent, forces you to speak more language.
Is Israel English language-friendly country? Yes. Can you get along easily in English there?
Definitely.
All cities or just Tel Aviv?
No, I think, so first of all, the second language in Israel is English. Most of the people, they speak English. So in almost every city will be fine with English. I mean, also Russian is pretty common because of the other former Soviet Union Jews that came to Israel. So if you speak Russian, I think maybe 25% of the population can speak Russian, something like that. It's the statistics. So you can also be fine with that to some extent.
But I've been following a little news from Israel recently. And is it a good time to move over there? Because just to do a little recap for those who are not aware of what's going on, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. So the prime minister, the actual prime minister right now, Netanyahu, who is the third time that he's the prime minister of Israel, and he's been from, I think, 1999, and since then three times, but in different time periods. Or
yeah, like so before this time, there was 1 year with a different prime minister.
Yeah. So there was some gaps without Netanyahu. And now he's passing, I think he just passed in the parliament, the jurisdictional reform, like the justice reform.
Right.
That removes the judges and the courtrooms from the responsibility to overthrow government decisions, right? So now, basically, whatever the government decides or the parliament decides, it's definitive, and there is no court that can overthrow it anymore.
So, it's a yes and no. It's not 100% precise. The point is that at the moment, how it is, everything, so everyone almost can appeal. Can send an appeal to the high court. So it's like everything is judgeable. And this was creating quite some difficulties. I mean, and it has to go back to how all the juridical system or together with the politics or the government are established. So we don't have a fixed
like constitution.
Constitution. Yeah, we don't exactly. We don't have a fixed constitution. We have some laws. And then that's the point. So kind of because of that, the juridical authority went a bit more to the into that. So to decide every new law that is decided by the government, nobody would check it according to the constitution, right? That's what will be checking the balance. Yeah. That's how you check it. But since we don't have a clear one, that's where the juridical authority will go into place. So now this is like, you know, it creates quite some complexities that was tried to be corrected. It doesn't mean that I'm supporting necessarily how it was done and so on. I think that it's better to have a larger agreement in the public, because it creates a lot of tensions in the public.
Yeah, there are frontal spray.
Yes. So I don't like the way it was done. I don't agree in the way on that, but I think there are some changes, and I think that the public in Israel agrees that some changes should be made. For example, another thing is, to my opinion, at the moment, the legal advisor of the government is also the prosecutor. And this created a conflict of interest, which is an issue, and this should be separated to two people. So practically at the moment, the prosecutor or the legal advisor is also deciding for each law, yes or no. So there are some things that, you know, we carried on with the time, it worked okay, but now it's time to think it through again and change it. Again, I'm not necessarily saying that the change that was made, this is the right way, but things has to change.
Yeah. Does the current prime minister has a reputation for corruption? Because he's already being judged for this Hollywood director case, right? That he's been lobbying.
Marcin,
what was the name of it?
Yeah, so like this, like that, he was accused in several things. And so far, he was not found guilty. and it's still an ongoing trial.
Yeah.
So there are three cases, two of them like were dissolved, like that, yeah, without accusation, and there is another one that is at the moment in investigation.
Which is this one, right?
The last one, yes. So this is the case. So at the moment, you know, you think democratically speaking, you are not guilty as long as it's not
proven that you are guilty.
Exactly.
But I mean, like in public opinion, because one thing is what the judges and prosecutors decide, because we know many countries when one thing the prosecutor says and one thing that public opinion knows for sure that it's not like that. Is it the case in Israel where everybody knows that he's guilty, but it's just the prosecutor's not finding it?
Let's put it like that. The rightist will say that he's not guilty. Like, you know, and in a lot of times in politics, not just in Israel, you know, you try to kind of frame a politician to take him out of the political life. Sometimes there is a truth behind it, and then they will be found guilty. And sometimes, you know, you try to kind of expel him from the politics and you try to set up something. So the supporters of Benjamin Netanyahu will say he was framed and it will be proven that he is not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
From the other hand, it's true that the leftists or the ones, let's say, the non-Netanyahu favors, they will say that he's corrupted and he has this, you know, like a bit of reputation according to different things that was happening. Nevertheless, I have to say that if you think about it, some people will say that every politician is corrupt in a sub extent,
of course,
right? So now it's a, we will see what will happen with this trial.
I was watching once, there is a new movie about Golda. You know Golda, right? Have you seen the movie yet?
Golda Meir, it's a new one, I think.
It's a new one with Ellen Mirren.
I didn't see it.
No. Yeah. And it was a very funny part because it shows the period when Golda goes to war with it. I forgot the name of a neighbor country.
We're talking Jordan or
I think Jordan.
Jordan.
There was a famous war. She was actually accused that she aggravated the situation while she had the opportunity to smooth things down. But anyway, there's this scene in the movie where there's a secretary general from the United States who was also Hebrew, and he comes to meet Golda in Israel. When he comes to meet her, he tells her, listen, I'm here, but first of all, I'm American. Second of all, I'm the secretary general of the United States. And then third, I am Jewish. And then Golda says, yes, but you know that here in Israel, we read from right to left.
That's a good one.
And they said that that's a true line, that she really said that. It's not just for the movie. What was the situation with, like, what do they tell now? Was she a good character of the story, or?
I didn't see the movie.
No, but like,
like every other prime minister, I mean, she has her good things and she has, there is some criticism against her. I mean, first of all, she was the first woman there to be a prime minister in Israel. So this is already one achievement, you know, to be like a modern category. We have,
and we're talking like 60 years ago. So
yes,
50 years ago or something. Which was not very common.
Yep. So exactly. So there are some, like every other prime minister, there are some things she could do better. There is quite, in this regards, what you mentioned, there are some criticism that she could do better. There are some things she was doing good. So,
yeah, totally. And I saw that you also do some sports, right? I didn't know that.
Neither do you. Judo? Yes, I.
How long?
I see you really investigated my.
I had to do some research.
Yeah, you really researched. No, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, I am doing judo.
It's true.
I'm black belt. And
black belt?
Yeah.
Damn. I should have messed up with you.
Yeah. I didn't train for the last year properly, so you might have it. Yeah, I mean, I'm doing judo since I'm a kid, actually. My parents sent me to do judo. I had some breaks.
Your parents sent you to do judo?
Yeah. So it's the first time that I hear that parents send their kid to do a sport that is physically damaging, in a sense.
Like, yes.
Parents sending self-protect. I mean, first of all, it's a sport, right?
Yeah.
Second, it's
also boxing is a sport, but I never heard of parents sending their kid.
Really?
That's very brave.
I mean, okay. I mean, no, I'm curious because, like, what did I talk to recently? Like a friend from Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, I also, I was in judo as a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I wonder if it's just in Israel, like, common to go to martial arts, or
is it common in Israel to go to martial arts?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, it's sports. Second, you know, like you, it has a lot of elements if we think about it. You know, it's like your determination. You need to train hard. You have competition. So you need to learn how to lose, how to win. We need to mentally be able to cope with when you lose, when you fail.
Mm-hmm. How do you cope with that? What do you do when you lose a fight? Are you angry? Do you shake the hands to your opponent? Or
yeah, so first of all, yeah, I will shake the hands of the opponent.
But is it honest? Like, you really mean it? Like, hey, good job. You deserve it. Or you think, yeah, I have to give him my hand?
I can tell you, like, personally, like, for me, in any sport or something, or basketball, it can be chess, whatever it is.
Because you like chess as well, right?
I'll
talk about that.
Here. So first of all, yes, I mean, you know, you lost, you lost. So I would shake his hand. But like for me, like what I don't like is to lose when I felt that I could do better.
Uh-huh.
When I'm better than the opponent and I lost it. This is annoying for me. Like, I don't like that. If you know, I feel, okay, it was better. But still, I mean, we need to look at it, you know, it's a sport, but still you need to show respect to the to your opponent. And so it's also a thing, like in judo, you know, you give respect. There is respect to the coach, there is respect to the dojo,
to the audience as well.
To the audience, yes. And so, yeah, judo, so where were we? Yeah, so I had quite some breaks, but as a kid, it was not like, then I went to the army, for example.
You went to the army? For how long?
I served 4.5 years. I was
4.5 years?
Yeah.
That's how long the Israeli army lasted?
In Israel, in my time. Now they shortened it a bit. It was a compulsory 3 years. But I did officer course. So officer's course, then I did a year and a half more.
Yeah, man, you're like 360-degree person. Tell me, I'm very curious about what is like the army in Israel.
So the army, I mean, so I was in the paratroopers, just to say.
What is that?
Like the ones that are jumping from the planes.
You have jumped from the...
I did my course. Yes.
How is the army?
I'm very curious. How is the army? So I think the army is... So one thing is it's kind of a melting pot. You know, you meet people from different cities, different towns. Because, you know, as a kid, you know, you just in your city. You learn in school. You get to know people from your city. Okay, of course, sometimes you go to other cities, but not very often.
Mm.
Now, in the army, you meet people from different backgrounds, different cities. So it's kind of a bit of a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Israel, you know, we have Jews, if you think about it, from all around the world. We have from Ethiopia, we have from the former Soviet Union, we have from different, we have Moroccans, we have Europeans, so people coming from different countries. Like, for example, my mom came to Israel from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my father was born in Israel, but my grandparents are from Europe, from Italy and German. So it's a very mixed. Now, in a fighting unit, it's also very, I mean, you need to train hard. It's, you know, for the beret, we walked 90 kilometers.
90?
Yeah, 9-0.
Wow. Where did you go? 90 kilometers.
So, but of course,
Israel is a small country. You probably ended up in another country.
Well, it's not that small, but of course you need to train. It's not that you do, you know, from 0 to 90, I mean, like that. You need to start with 3, then you do 7, 10, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be ready for that. Also for the body, it's very important to build it up.
Mm-hmm.
Same like you go to the gym. You don't start with like, I don't know, 100 kilos at once. You need to, you know, build it up. Otherwise, you can get yourself injured.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in the army you do things that you will never do in your civil life, so to say. You know, like jumping from the plane with a...
Did you jump alone or duo?
No, you jump alone.
You jump alone?
But it's like, it goes like that. Yeah, it goes like that. So you are, all the soldiers are on the plane, and they are like, push you.
Yeah,
like really? In a way. I mean, you need to jump. But if you're the first one, because the plane kind of does a turn. And then if you're the first one, so you are standing, you know, next to the door, you see all the view, so you need to have the guts. So that one might be pushed a bit. But the rest is just like, you know, like a production line, like check, you jump, tack, 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 tack. You don't have time to think.
Have you ever been the first one?
Yes, I had. So that does you go scary. You look at the ground.
Did it take you long to jump?
Not so much, because eventually, you know, if you think too much,
you never do it.
Yeah, that's when you start
like your kind life in general.
Yeah, you just need to jump and hope that your parachute will reopen. I mean, it's like that. You have two, so you need to count 3 seconds.
After 3 seconds,
after you jump, three seconds, your main parachute should open.
I've seen in the movies, they stay like 10 minutes in the air before.
Oh, but the first you saw is like a free, maybe like a skydive, right?
It does well.
But in skydive, you have like, because you jump first for higher.
Oh,
it's a different paratroop.
Parachute.
It's a different parachute. I think that
there is a
starting to work.
Starting to build it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So the parachute is bigger. It's a bit different. You have also someone. Like as the guy that is with you, so you do it dual. So this is different. I mean, it's also like not for fun.
Nah, it's called the tandem, I think.
Yeah, tandem. Exactly, tandem. So like for us, you know, you're also with the weapon. It's not just you jump and you have fun and there is a photographer taking a video of you and all good. It's a bit different. And then, of course, you have a reserve parachute. So then in case your first one doesn't open, when something happens, then you can open the other one. That's how it works.
If the second one doesn't open,
then you should pray to God.
You better have said your prayers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how long did you stay in the air?
How long do you stay in the air?
Cool.
I think it's a few minutes.
Few minutes.
Yeah.
Did you have like a target where you should land or not?
We have it. There is no like a you know like a specific target like really a point where you
got an area
with the event, but there is an area. It's like we said where we train so that you can you know, and then everyone after you land, you will wrap up your stuff, and then you need to meet everyone else in the meeting point. This is how it works.
So it's also part of the challenge to find the meeting point after you land, or it was easy.
Prepare, yes. So. It depends. In the course, no, because it's kind of known. It's not like that, but of course, in the field, it's a different story.
Have you ever been in, have they ever sent you to war? Or at least in a conflict, maybe not a
conflict area, yes, but we didn't do it with the parachutes.
So you were mainly like peacekeepers, not fighting? Or what is...
No, what do you mean? War like that, so... For example, in Lebanon, I was in Lebanon, but like in my times, we were still in Lebanon. Afterwards, we went out of Lebanon. We just keep the border. But before that, when we were in Lebanon, so we have some camps that we had to, you know, guards. So that we don't have any terrorists coming to Israel, but we are more in like South Lebanon to protect the border of Israel, or like in the West Bank. There are some Jewish neighborhood, there are some Palestinian areas, so we also want to keep the order there. So it's not like, I can't say now, for example, that Israel and the Palestinian Authority are in war. But there is a conflict. If we compare it now to Ukraine and Russia, that they are bombing each other, that's a war.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different.
Kosovo and Serbia, for example, it's a conflict.
Yeah, exactly. So it's terminology-wise, it's a bit different.
You don't have to be specific, but you can answer as much as you can. Like, did you ever get orders that you didn't want to follow, like that were against your principles?
Not as a human being, no.
Oh, no. It never went that far? Or
did it? In my time, it was four years and a half, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot. What's one or two things that you learned from the army outside the like physical training, of course, not physical skills?
What I learned, like as a person, did it help you? Did you come out of the army as a different person from the one that you walked in, or were you
how old were you?
So I started at 18.
18?
Yeah, after the high school. So you finish your, how do you say, matura?
Yeah,
high school. Yeah. High school. Normally go after high school.
It's mandatory for everyone, or
yes, just people who don't want to go to university?
No, it's mandatory.
Or you can also do, sometimes the army can propose you to go first to university and then come to the army, so they can pay for your tuition, but then you need to serve more time because it's kind of, that's the deal, the win-win. But yeah, so it depends on your service, the different routes, so to say,
that you can go by.
Jay, how do you feel?
So how do you feel after?
You throw me like, you know, to, I don't know, when was it?
18.
You throw me like 20 plus years back. So I'm trying to recall what was my...
Well, it's also part of the question, what is left within you from the army? So what is the strongest feeling that you had after it?
I think, so first of all, it's the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are, like, you know, you're responsible for your friends. When we do different operations and so on, it's important to be responsible, because if you, you know, you fuck up, I mean, it depends on the situation, but it can cost like life. But it's also the, like, it's very difficult, I think, because I, as an officer, I was I moved to another unit, and I was kind of in touch with the Palestinian Authority, were responsible to all the civil affairs and in that regard. So, like, let's say if there were some cancer, people with cancer in the Palestinian Authority, and since in Israel, the level of the medical treatment is higher, so we'd coordinate them to come to Israel, for example. We also try to encourage business, so like economy. So I was talking to businessmen, Palestinian businessmen. We try to bring them to Israel to make some business. I mean, it was a different times, I have to say. Mm. Like at that point, the Israeli government idea, and that was the plan, you know, if we develop the economy, the Palestinian Authority, when people, you know, have enough money, they don't go to march in the street and do some terror attacks. Unfortunately, I have to say, this is turned around on us when the second Intifada started. Because this changed everything. And from there, it's just we went downhill, so to say. But what I want to say, so it's very challenging because, you know, first of all, you fight against the terrorists. But in the other side, of course, there are also just people that want to live. You know, they want a business and want to live. I had some friends on the other side.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when all of a sudden there is a terror attack in Israel, then, you know, everyone is getting mad and, you know, you want to kind of pay back. Mm-hmm. When we think about it, and you have to be very thought through. Mm-hmm. How you do, what you do, because it's not, of course, you don't want to generalize, you don't want to punish kind of everyone, and you won't do it exactly that. And it's also, as a normal citizen, it's difficult because, you know, all these terror organizations, if they come to your house with weapons and so on, etc., what can you do practically?
Yeah,
it's very difficult. Nevertheless, of course, there are some that are supporting. You know, we found in ambulances, we found the weapons as well. So we try to be humanitarian and allow ambulances. I remember even one time I got a call on the Palestinian side, and they told me it was almost midnight. And I give you like actually a concrete example.
Mm.
So a week before, there was a terrorist attack on a checkpoint where five soldiers were shot. Okay, now I'm getting a phone call from the Palestinian. I say it's like night.
From who?
The Palestinian Authority.
Palestinian.
Yeah, we're in touch with them, and they're like,
look, soon, like at midnight, there will be an ambulance with a pregnant lady. She needs to get to the hospital. She's coming. We'll come to this checkpoint. So I went to this checkpoint with my team to announce the soldiers in this checkpoint, hey, you know, a car will come fast. And like an ambulance will come with a pregnant lady. So were you ready for that, so to say? And then, because otherwise, you know, if I'm a soldier at this checkpoint and a car is coming fast, it's midnight to my checkpoint, and I know that a week before, the five of my friends got shot. This could be a like different situation. You are very prepared. That's why I went there, because I knew this could be tricky. So that's what I'm saying. It's like what I learned. It's a very complex. Because you have like the terrorist organization that you are fighting with, but they're also like the normal civilians, so to say. And then it's very hard to.
Did you have like people on the other side of the Palestinian border that you were in touch with often, that you somehow trusted them? Because, you know, no matter what, there are still individuals and they are not governments. Am I right?
Yeah.
So. Were there people that you just trust? Yeah, I know this guy. And then the guy, for example, calls you, hey, there's an ambulance calling. Are these the same people you were in touch with almost every day or every week? So just random people with codes that they have no names that contact?
No, like some people, it's official. It's officials in the Palestinian Authority. So there is the ones that are in touch with us. Like some of them are officials. So it's not a problem that they are calling us. Okay, so it's known, and those are the officials nominated to be in touch with the Israeli sites, we'll say.
Just to interrupt, there is only one single rule to this podcast: for everything you don't want to talk about, just say I don't want to talk about it. Okay.
No, I'm saying like I don't want to mention names. Yeah, somewhere that, and I will not mention.
Okay,
that. No, but so somewhere so. Some it's okay, but it's out. But to say that I trust the officials on every word, I can't say that.
It was your job not to trust them, right?
It was not. It's not about the job. It's just about, you know, like, would you trust the politicians in your country?
Yeah.
I don't know. Not on every word. I'm not sure. Yeah. So everything is like, you know, there is some interest, there is different things. So, yeah, I don't think that it's difficult to know exactly and so on who you can trust, who you can't.
For us, or especially for, first of all, for people who are not from Israel, and even more for people who have never been to Israel, we only know about that from what we've seen in Western media. So time to time we read or we see that there's a new drone attack, and then all of this army or this bomb or this bus has been blown up. So what is, like, if you can summarize it a little in simple words, not very political, not very in details maybe, but what is the opinion that floats around Israel about the conflict on the other side of Palestine? What is that? Why is this conflict?
Okay.
What do Israeli expect from this?
Okay,
not today, not this year, but overall, what is this about?
I think so. First of all, one thing I realized, I mean, I said I was also traveling a lot, and I also when moving to Vienna, so a lot of people have this idea that. Because of what you see in the news, that Israel is a risky place.
Exactly. That's why I'm asking you now.
Yeah. I'm happy to answer that. There's a question that I'm asking, and I'm happy to kind of break
the myth.
The image. So like the thing is, it's if you think about it, because you only see Israel when something is happening, there is a terrorist attack or something, then in your brain, it seems as a risky place. Because when everything is relaxed, you don't hear anything about it in the news. True. Just yet another country. So this is one thing. So I think that, you know, once you come to Israel, you feel safe. It's not that you feel like you are every day going to die.
Yeah.
It's not the case. Totally Totally not. Okay. It's actually a fun place. It's nice. We have a beach. We have a nice people, welcoming people, friendly. The food is good. The weather is nice. There is a lot to see. I mean, I can even say, like, I once went for vacation in Israel for 2 weeks. I mean, because normally when you go for vacation, you go to another country.
Yeah.
Once I went for 2 weeks in Israel, it was one of the great experiences that I have, because I experienced Israel as a tourist. And then you see in such a short distance how the landscape is changing. For example, it starts from green in the north, then you have the coastline, then the desert, then a lot, and the Dead Sea, and then everything is such a short distance as you don't need to drive so many hours. So this is one to say. Now, like regarding how Israel is, I see the situation. I think, you know, every Israeli eventually wants to live in peace. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not fun every time to have that. But nevertheless, we are surrounded. You know, we have Lebanon, we have the Hezbollah in Lebanon, we have Syria there. Iran is we don't have border with Iran, but also Iran, even now, I read in the news that, you know, Iran and the Hezbollah, they are looking into what's happening in Israel, looking for the right moment when we are weak, and they are like happy with what's happening. So we have quite some enemies surrounding us, and therefore we need to have a stronger army and be prepared. I mean,
why are you surrounded by enemies? What's wrong with you?
Why are we surrounded by enemies? Well, why they are enemies?
Why your neighborhood countries are your enemies? What do they want from you? Because it seems like, do these countries that are your enemies are friends with each other, or they are also enemies with each other?
Well, that's the best. Let's put it like that. Huh? When they are around common interests, yes. But for example, I can say Egypt. I mean, we have peace with Egypt and Jordan, so I don't consider them as enemies per se. But you ask me, like, are they together, all of them?
Yeah, so to identify who's the enemy of who.
No, so I'm saying, like, look, for example, in the 6 days war, we were, like, attacked by all the armies together.
So they mean they all want something that you have.
They want, so let's put it like that. Like, for sure, the Palestinians, some of them, okay, I don't want to generalize, but they are grew up, from my experience, with the idea that, you know, they want to have Israel back. Or not back, because it was never, all of it was theirs. It was the British,
but that's it.
But they want to get, you know, they want to get pieces of Israel. They don't acknowledge or they don't recognize Israel, etc. This is what, and like, you know, Jordan have peace with us, so they recognize us as a country. Same way with Egypt and so on. And also, like, the Hezbollah in Lebanon, they are totally against Israel. They don't want Israel to exist. They want to
come in.
So this is the whole.
Now it's clear.
Yeah, me.
And is there anything more specific regarding Palestine?
Regarding Palestine, I mean, in the, like, so.
Because that's the most famous conflict in that area.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is like that. If you look at the conflict from different angles, the issue that I see for the Israeli government, looking at the Palestinian Authority now, what are the key issues in order to make peace? So first of all, it's what I said. So they are, or most of them grew up with the agenda that they should, with force, they should take over Israel. That's what. Now, but let's put it aside for a second. If we want to have peace, first of all, you need to have a leader that you can speak with. The issue is that if you look at the Palestinian Authority currently, we have the Hamas in Gaza Strip, and we have the Fatah, it's another organization where the President Mahmoud Abbas is there from the Fatah. So you have two organizations, each one on a different area. Who are you speaking to?
Yeah.
And they're not very...
It's not clear of night running the country.
Exactly. The second point is, question is, what's the solution? This is a big discussion.
Yeah.
Is it one country? Is it two countries? Etc. How we go about it.
Okay.
Now, these two areas of the Palestinian Authority, in a way, they are disconnected. Now they win. Now Jerusalem is currently under the Israeli government. It's part of Israel. It was always part of the Israel, says the Bible. It's nothing new. But will they agree to an agreement that doesn't have Jerusalem? Not necessarily.
Is Jerusalem the what it used to be? Is it related to what it used to be called Nazareth?
No, Nazareth is a different city.
It's a different city.
Yeah.
So that's also part of the biblical conflict if Jesus was born in Nazareth or in Jerusalem?
I don't,
because I'm not very knowledgeable about this.
Like Nazareth is like the parents of Jesus, they are from Nazareth.
Yeah.
Joseph is from Nazareth and so on. I don't know exactly about this, where Jesus was born.
Okay. Yeah, then that's another conflict.
I mean, it's not about the conflict. It's maybe like,
yeah, I mean,
if you use the Christians to fit in where. But on any case, Nazareth is, it's part of Israel. So this is called debate.
Okay.
Jerusalem, for me as well. But I'm just saying that, you know, for the Palestinians to agree for something like that, it's kind of, you know, it in a way, it's a taboo. Like, it's difficult to agree for that.
It's like giving up.
It's there.
Yeah, they don't want to give up.
Kind of like that. But I want to be hopeful. Let's put it like that. And I hope that eventually we will manage to find one way or around to have peace, because I think eventually everyone wants to have peace. No one wants to be always in dust. I mean, look at Europe. We can look at Austria. Okay, in Austria, you could go to the army for like half a year, but in general, you know, you have kind of peace around you as a country. So then you can put your budget in developing the country in other things, and you don't need to put so much budget
in the army.
In the army.
Like the United States does.
Exactly. So let's hope for a good future.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Well, I'll go back slightly to the fact that you walk 90 kilometers. And, and now you also do hiking, right?
Yes.
You were hiking last week or 2 weeks ago. When was that?
I was hiking. Yeah, when was it? Beginning of July. So
was it in North Italy? Because I associate
the church. It was in the Alta Via, and it's the highway. It's between Venice and Monaco. This is the whole way.
So where did you start? You started
with Venice? Not exactly in there. Venice. We started in the Cortina, Gambeso. It's 3 hours from Venice. We didn't do the whole round. We did part of it. We did kind of, I don't know, about 60 kilometers.
60?
Not in one day. Like a few days.
Uh-huh.
50, yeah. We did leverage something like 13 kilometers per day. So yeah, 55 kilometers. Yeah, but I like to hike. It's nice. I mean, I like to, that's how you get the feeling of a place, to see nature. And I was hiking a lot also in Israel.
Mm.
And I did it actually with friends from Israel. So we do it once in a while, like this big hike, you know, people and families and so on. So it's not so easy to go for 1 week without the family and the kids.
Yeah.
And so on. So this was planned for like 2 years.
Until someone who had kid 2 years ago, his kid was grown up, so now you can go hiking.
You need to plan it in advance.
All these sports like judo and hiking and relate so much to the activities that you might and the skills you might have also gained in the army or the hobbies that you might have gained from the army. But on the other hand, you also play chess, right?
Yeah.
So that's completely different. I would say it's so passive as sport. If you want to call it sport, it's a game, right? So when did it start? Was your hobby?
Chess. Well, I started with chess when I was in the third grade. My grandfather taught me how to play chess. And I actually went in elementary school. I went to a school that it's kind of was your obligation to go to the classes. And there was also like you could do not after school, because it was during school activities, like learning chess or checkers. And actually, I was initially playing checkers.
What's that one? The checkers?
Dama.
Oh, the Dama. Okay.
Dama. Checkers. Yeah. But like international Dava, so it means that you have it's a slightly bigger board. Okay. So you have like four lines and you have five pieces on each line.
Oh yeah, that's what I know.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So it's not like on a big board, but it's a bit.
No, it's the chessboard, but on the opposite side of it. So you play.
No, turn it big. Yeah, this is big game that you are talking about with the cubes. This is big game.
I'm talking about the ones that has the cones, like cones. Cool. Is it the Dama or no?
It can be with cone, but normally it's like these flat pieces.
The round ones, right?
Yeah,
the round pieces that you put in these drone cones.
Yes,
right. That's the one I call Dama. We used to play, I mean, not me, but back in Albania, they used to play turn upside down the chessboard. Right. And it's like, it's a board for Dama.
Okay, maybe then in Albania, yeah, it was like that.
Could be.
Yeah. But the point is because the chessboard has like, if you like four black squares on each line.
Yeah.
And this one has five.
Uh-huh.
So like you put five pieces on each line, it's a bit bigger. Could be that you in like in the chessboard that you had it was like that.
Yeah, could be. Well, I don't know. I never had it. I don't like games, but I've seen people playing it.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you like about chess? Is it about the strategy?
I mean, chess. I like the strategy, and I like also like kind of. I like the challenge. It's like kind of.
Maybe the.
Yeah, like a logical challenge. It's not mental per se. It's more like logic. So you have to think, well, you need to analyze the situation.
Yeah.
You know, I studied mathematics.
You studied mathematics? Now you're completely confused. What did you study mathematics?
I studied, so in the university, I graduated with double degree, mathematics and industrial engineering, specializing in IT. And then afterwards, I did an MBA, like later on.
Well, let me recap this. So you're a marketing director.
Yes.
Because this is also another thing who's been in the army for almost 5 years, throwing himself from the airplane with a parachute.
Yeah.
With two parachutes. Who does hiking and judo and plays chess, but has actually studied mathematics with a specialization in IT.
Mathematics and industrial engineering.
Yes. So what is your main thing? What's the title that I'm going to put for you in the podcast?
Like, what title do you need?
Multitasking.
You need like I mean, you need what, like a professional title or just
whatever, the one that you would like to be introduced with. Whatever you want, but you can think about that later.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just a joke for the moment.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about jokes. Now let's confuse the audience even more. You like to read stand-up comedy.
Yeah, that's also a thing. You know, when I was a kid, or like always my uncle, you know, when he was visiting us and we came to visit him, he was always like telling me some jokes, actually. And then when I grew up, it's like I was telling him as well. So we had kind of these jokes exchange. Also in Israel, I think like we have a lot of stand up and jokes. We like to laugh in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so growing up in this culture, I also developed some of that skills in a way. And I also like to perform, I have to say. I even during my professional career, I took some acting course.
Really?
Yeah.
Here in Vienna? Was it here?
Not in Vienna, in Israel.
In Israel,
yeah. And like, so I enjoy it.
Have you ever played in a theater movie?
I played in commercials.
Where? I should check the robot.
Yeah, I can share you the link. It's all the actually, I saw that they even did it in German.
The same commercial?
Yeah, yeah.
They dubbed you?
Yeah. No doubt me. It's they just put a different. How do you say?
Oh, like the three shows at the end, they just change the titles, like things like this?
Yeah, the titles and also the speaking, because it's someone kind of moderating.
I mean, okay, like it's a narrator and they just change the narrator, but you're not speaking in there.
No much, right?
I'm not speaking there.
What's the commercial? You can say it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it's it's a company that does like windows, but like double layer and like, it's a famous company in Israel.
Oh, and they also have in here in Austria or Germany. That's why
if we think about it, they are, I don't think they have an office here, but they are targeting the market. They are targeting also the German and Spanish market.
And what are you planning to pursue the acting career furthermore, or
I have to say that, you know. I was always I think that I have two sides. I have the rational side, like the brain, and that's with the mathematics, chillness, and so on, career and everything. But I also have the more romantic side.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, I don't know, MBA maybe is also rational still, but I have the romantic side. I mean, I like the sports things, all and the hiking also from the social part. Like, you work with friends. I like more like group sports, like in the, I don't know, for example, jogging for me is boring.
It's boring?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't like jogging so much, also gym.
Because it's like, because all the things you mentioned actually are things that you interact with at least one more person.
Exactly.
And that's the, like the low, let's say the rule for you to start something, it has to be at least interactive with another person.
Yeah.
Right? That's why you don't like running.
Yeah. So you need to put yourself into running in order to like it. Yeah, but exactly. So I like the group sports. I like, so for me, I like more basketball, soccer.
Is it because you need to like get a sort of a real-time feedback or get some challenge within you? And if you're alone, then there's no one to tell you if you're doing it wrong or right.
So that
you can't improve.
Yeah, there are two things that I had in mind. One is I like to have goals. In the sense, you know, in basketball, you need to put the ball in the basket. I mean, okay, you can like pass it to a friend, but you have a goal. Soccer, they say. Judo, they say. In running, there is not clear goal. You need to cover.
It's just cover yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like always cover.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's okay. Of course, you can compete against yourself, your time that you are running, the distance. Mm. But I don't know. It's not, let's say, it's not my, if I have to choose, it's not my number one sport.
Okay.
Truth is that jogging, the good thing about jogging, that it's easy to
find.
You know, yeah, to apply it. You just, you know, go downstairs and you can
run. Exactly. You don't need an area, you don't need a stadium, you don't need anything like that.
Because I need an audience.
Yeah.
Well, there, that's already a lot of things. But there is a, now I want
to just split it up a little. Why there are so many jokes about Israelis that they don't spend money or they like to save money? Because it's like a common, not joke, but like common known thing for Israelis.
I think, I mean, so one thing that I learned, and to say, because it's like all the jokes is about the Jews having money and they don't spend
money.
Yeah. Also having money.
Yeah.
So one thing that I have to say, one thing that I learned, that's why when I was in Ukraine once in Odessa, I went for like a tour about the Jewish history. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of merchants in the Jewish community, but at one point they were banned from any profession,
mm-hmm.
but lending money. So practically they were kind of pushed to that. And from there, this idea of the Jews are lending their money and keeping money came. That's one. Second, it's true that in Israel, we look a lot for value for money.
Okay, so you're mainly looking for the deals in a sense, like if it's worth buying it for the price it says.
Yes, so it's true that we look for value for money, for good deals. It's like, you know, but the good thing is like, you know, when you travel, for example, and I travel to quite some countries. I don't know, actually, I recently checked it. There is even an ad about checking how many countries I reached 50.
50 countries already,
plus only 150 left, approximately.
Yeah,
that's a lot of countries.
Yeah,
imagine cities then.
What's that?
Imagine how many cities you need.
Cities,
So when you meet normal in Israel in your trip, you will know how to tell you where to go, where to find, where's the best deal, where to buy what, and so on. So it's really 5 minutes, you are good, because we check, you know. Where is the value for money? Where are good things, recommendations, etc. So I think it's coming from there.
Mm-hmm. But do you have any internal jokes about this? Like,
yeah, of course. We have, like, you know, we also make laughs about, like, within Israel. So, you know, we are Jews, but from different countries. So, for example, the Yemenites or the Persians, they are considered to be a bit more stingy with their army. So we have like different jokes on each country, kind of. Yeah. So we, or for example, Romanians, like we laugh about the Romanians that are thieves
in a way.
And each, so our Polish are like that, or this is like that, but it's like, so as I said, it's not like the Polish is Polish or the Romanian. It's like, you know, the, because the Jews are from different countries, they have laughs inside Israel about that.
That there is this comedy series that I love. It's called Family Guy. Maybe you heard of it. And the cartoon ones, but I love it. Well, they have very great jokes. And they do a lot of jokes with Jewish people, and mainly, of course, about the fact that Jewish people don't want to spend money. And there's this Jewish character who has a shop, and his shop is not doing well. It's not selling. And then there comes this other character with strategy, with a marketing strategy, and tells him how to sell more. And this guy is telling to the Jew owner, to the Jewish owner, is telling, you should apply a new, like a offer of something. And he says, like, what? He said, well, for example, you do the offer, buy one, get one free. And then the Jew said, yeah, buy one and get one free. Yeah, buy one and he's not even here in the apartment, get one free. It's not in his vocabulary at all. And then he says, well, you can do it like the front, just like the store just in front of you that is selling buy one, get one free. Where? And then he runs to the other store. And suddenly he hears that when the others are doing it. Well, so I wish you good luck in moving back to Israel. And I hope I'll stay in touch with you.
I'll be happy to see how it evolves, this podcast.
I'll just follow. And by the way, we got a new magazine. I don't know if you heard of that. We got a magazine. It's called the International Magazine. It has many printed versions, but still limited. So if you or anyone wants to get a copy, just reach out to us on social media page or to on LinkedIn, and I'll provide a copy to anyone who wants it. But if you're not in Vienna, you can just check it out online at theinternational.at. We have a section that is called magazine.
It's in English.
It's in English. Everything is in English. Yes.
.at.
Yes, it's in English. Theinternational.at.
Actually, you need to say .at.
True. That's now we are confusing things. So I'll lend you a magazine. You should check it out and maybe give me a feedback from your marketing perspective.
How it works.
Thanks, man.
That is a pleasure.
Cheers.